Have you ever looked at your morning coffee and seen a miracle? A.J. Jacobs did, and it changed his life. In his book, Thanks a Thousand, Jacobs, a self-described Larry David type, naturally inclined toward annoyance rather than appreciation, embarks on an extraordinary mission to personally thank every single person involved in producing his daily cup of coffee. This deceptively simple project takes him across continents, social hierarchies, and time zones, transforming his worldview along the way. The book has garnered praise from figures like Arianna Huffington, who called it a powerful reminder that gratitude can be a pathway to deeper connection. Since its 2018 release, it has inspired gratitude movements in workplaces and schools nationwide. What makes this journey so compelling isn't just the ambitious goal, but how it reveals the invisible web connecting us all through even the most ordinary objects in our lives. The gratitude journey begins at Joe Coffee, a local New York cafe that has somehow survived 12 years despite nearby Starbucks competition. While waiting in line, Jacobs forces himself to put away his phone and actually notice his surroundings. The indigo lamps, mothers with strollers, and the comforting hiss of the espresso machine. His first thank you goes to Chung, a Korean-American barista with an incredibly friendly demeanor. When Jacobs returns days later to explain his project, she reveals the challenges of serving people in their pre-caffeinated state. Some customers barely make eye contact, snarling orders while staring at their phones. She's been berated to tears and even snapped at by a bratty 9-year-old who didn't like her milk foam design. Despite these challenges, Chung remains positive, seeing her job not just as serving coffee, but making people happy. Her words hit home as Jacobs realizes he's often been that distracted customer, wearing noise-canceling headphones and treating service workers like vending machines. He pledges to at least make eye contact going forward. Next, Jacobs meets Ed Kaufman, head coffee buyer at Joe Coffee, a passionate expert who looks like a young Elvis Costello. Ed introduces him to professional coffee tasting, slurping samples loudly to aerate them across his taste buds and describing flavors with incredible specificity, graham crackers, mandarin orange, pink lady apples. As a bass player in a band, Ed sees himself as necessary but background, a perfect metaphor for Jacob's project about acknowledging the overlooked contributors behind everyday items. This first step reveals what psychologists call responsibility bias, where we overemphasize individual achievement and undervalue collaboration. By starting with the most visible links in the coffee chain, Jacobs begins to understand how much we take for granted in our daily interactions. The seemingly simple coffee cup reveals itself as a canvas for multiple hidden masterpieces of design and engineering. The Viora lid on Jacob's cup isn't just a plastic cover, but a marvel of engineering. Not flat-topped, but geodesic, with an elegant crescent-shaped sipping hole. Created by Doug Fleming, a coffee-obsessed Seattle attorney, this Tesla of the lid world solves two major problems: preserving aroma through a deeper nose crevice and preventing splashing with a specially carved sipping hole. Despite manufacturing challenges, Doug found a Canadian company that helped produce the oddly shaped openings, now made in Tennessee from odor-free plastic pellets. But he's not done. He's already working on his Mona Lisa of coffee lids, proving that even the most mundane objects can be hidden masterpieces of industrial design. The sleek blue Joe Coffee logo comes from Market Johnson, a former guitarist in a 13-person band called the Cinematic Underground. His design process involved agonizing over the tiniest details, from finding the perfect Art Deco typeface with slightly rounded corners to cleverly hiding a bird's-eye view of a coffee cup inside the letter O. Mark's passionate commitment to good design, he gets furious at poorly spaced store displays, represents the countless designers working to make our visual landscape more elegant. Even the humble coffee sleeve, technically a zarf dating back to ancient Turkish and Chinese nobles, has a fascinating origin story. reinvented in 1992 as the Java Jacket by Jay and Colleen Sorensen after Jay suffered a painful drive-through coffee spill, this kitchen table invention became the American dream. Starting with $10,000 borrowed from Jay's parents during financially difficult times, their invention eventually earned a place in the Museum of Modern Art's Humble Masterpieces exhibit, alongside aspirin and Lego bricks. These stories reveal how objects we barely notice represent countless hours of human ingenuity, problem-solving, and care. As Jacobs notes, we're surrounded by hidden masterpieces of design that we never appreciate because they work so seamlessly. The Joe Coffee Roastery in Brooklyn reveals another layer of the coffee journey, a cavernous facility with exposed brick walls, century-old wood beams, and an unexpectedly elegant golden chandelier that seems transported from a Victorian mansion. The industrial roasting machines, as Jacobs colorfully describes, resemble a pizza oven and a clothes dryer had a baby. Massive stainless steel drums capable of holding up to 60 pounds of beans, continuously stirred by precisely calibrated metallic arms over carefully controlled gas fires that reach temperatures up to 450 degrees Fahrenheit. Throughout the 12-minute roasting cycle, every second counts, with sophisticated computer systems displaying real-time temperature curves and rate of rise graphs that look more like stock market data than coffee production metrics. The roasting team, Eric, Lee, and their colleagues, demonstrate the surprising physicality of coffee production. They maneuver 152-pound burlap bags of raw beans with practiced efficiency, each developing their own signature technique through years of experience. Some, like Eric, tie the bags together like a mule for easier transport, while Lee prefers to slide them across the concrete floor like a bar drink. The post-roasting process reveals an unexpected artistry, as the team uses oversized steel scoopers reminiscent of garden spades to fill 5-pound bags for local cafes. Eric, in particular, has developed a mesmerizing technique, working on multiple bags simultaneously in a choreographed dance of precision and efficiency. The deeper Jacobs delves into the coffee industry, the more complex its moral landscape becomes, presenting a challenge to his gratitude project. His friend Rudy, a professor specializing in coffee economics, provides a sobering perspective, warning against oversimplifying the industry's impact. Coffee's global footprint is both positive and negative. It provides livelihoods for an estimated 125 million people worldwide and delivers daily dopamine boosts to countless consumers, but also contributes to environmental challenges through deforestation and water usage, while some regions still struggle with labor exploitation and unfair trading practices. This complexity initially creates a moral quandary for Jacob's gratitude journey. However, through conversations with workers, economists, and his own research, he discovers that gratitude isn't incompatible with critical awareness. Studies from positive psychology researchers demonstrate that grateful individuals are actually more likely to engage in pro-social behavior, donate to charitable causes, and work towards systemic change. This insight fundamentally reshapes his understanding of gratitude. Not as passive acceptance, but as an active force for positive change. True gratitude, he realizes, functions as a dual lens, appreciating the current value while maintaining clear vision of needed improvements. As Jacobs eloquently concludes, gratitude isn't about accepting the status quo. It's about recognizing value while still working towards something better. A perspective that acknowledges both the beauty and the challenges of the coffee industry's complex ecosystem. Coffee is 98.8% water, making water quality paramount to the perfect cup. This revelation leads Jacobs to explore the magnificent Catskill Mountains reservoirs that supply New York City's renowned water. There, he discovers an engineering marvel. A complex system of 19 interconnected reservoirs covering an area twice the size of Rhode Island. The system, built over decades, represents both triumph and tragedy. Entire communities were displaced, their towns and farms deliberately flooded to create these essential waterways. Today, this vast network undergoes rigorous testing, with an astounding 2.2 million tests conducted annually to ensure water purity. At the testing facility, water scientist Kirsten guides Jacobs through their state-of-the-art laboratory. Here, teams work around the clock testing for hundreds of substances, from harmful bacteria to industrial chemicals. The purification process combines traditional methods like chlorination with modern technology such as UV radiation treatment. Each step is carefully calibrated and monitored, creating multiple barriers against contamination. The result is so exceptional that New York City stands among just 5 major American cities granted a filtration avoidance waiver by the EPA, a testament to the water's natural purity and the system's effectiveness. The water journey transforms Jacobs' perspective on everyday conveniences. He learns about the gravity-fed system that delivers water from the Catskills to New York City, requiring minimal pumping and saving millions in energy costs. The infrastructure's elegant design, dating back to the early 1800s, continues to serve millions of people daily. This realization leads him to develop what he calls negative gratitude, appreciation for problems we don't face, like the daily water struggles common in many parts of the world. This new awareness prompts Jacobs to create a nighttime ritual of alphabetical gratitude, focusing on coffee-related blessings. From aqueducts to zinc pipes, he finds this practice more engaging than counting sheep and more meaningful than traditional gratitude exercises. It helps him recognize the invisible network of infrastructure, workers, and systems that make modern life possible. The section illuminates how our most basic conveniences represent the culmination of centuries of human achievement. From the Roman aqueducts to modern chlorination techniques, from the sacrifice of displaced communities to the daily dedication of water quality technicians, each glass of water tells a story of human ingenuity and collective effort. As Jacobs reflects, we're drinking history with every sip, benefiting from countless unnamed heroes who built and maintained these systems that we so easily take for granted. To practice gratitude for his health, Jacobs develops an unconventional ritual of reading aloud lists of terrible diseases he doesn't have, from bubonic plague to dengue fever to flesh-eating bacteria. When his ankle aches during his morning jog, instead of complaining about his aging body's clicks and pops, he consciously redirects his thoughts to appreciate his ability to walk and run. His friend Will McCaskill, an Oxford ethics philosopher, shares a profound perspective, saying he's sometimes just thankful I have arms. A simple yet powerful reminder that even our most basic physical attributes deserve recognition and gratitude. This mindfulness about health extends to contemplating existence itself, with Jacobs incorporating memento mori, reminders of death, as a gratitude strategy. He keeps a small skull on his desk, not as a morbid decoration, but as a daily reminder to appreciate being alive. During his research, Jacobs discovers encouraging news about his daily coffee habit. Studies in major medical journals indicate it may lower risks of liver cancer by up to 40%, reduce the likelihood of Alzheimer's disease, and potentially extend lifespan, transforming his morning ritual into a moment of health-conscious gratitude. The safety of modern coffee stands in stark contrast to its historical predecessors. In Victorian London, coffee was routinely adulterated with shocking ingredients, brick dust, ground acorns, burnt sugar, horse liver, and even sawdust. Arthur Hill Hassell, a pioneering 19th-century British scientist, became a food safety crusader by using microscopy to expose these dangerous impurities. His work led to the landmark 1860 Food Adulteration Act in Britain, setting a precedent for modern food safety legislation worldwide. Jacobs develops a newfound appreciation for contemporary food safety systems, particularly during his visit to the New York Department of Health. While shadowing inspectors, he witnesses the meticulous processes that protect public health, from temperature monitoring to cross-contamination prevention. Though some chefs bristle at the regulations, comparing them to bureaucratic overreach, Jacobs challenges the libertarian perspective presented in Leonard Reed's famous essay, I, Pencil. Where Reed argues for free market self-regulation, Jacobs presents compelling evidence that food safety requires robust oversight and coordinated systems. The modern food safety infrastructure represents an invisible shield protecting millions daily. It encompasses countless individuals, farmers following safety protocols, transportation workers maintaining cold chains, laboratory technicians testing for contaminants, and inspectors ensuring compliance. This complex system, which we often take for granted, represents one of humanity's greatest achievements in public health. As Jacobs poignantly observes, every time we don't get food poisoning, we should be sending mental thank you notes to hundreds of people we'll never meet, from the microbiologist testing samples to the health inspector checking refrigerator temperatures at our local coffee shop. Jacob's Coffee travels 2,500 miles over 9 months via motorcycles, trucks, boats, vans, and forklifts before reaching his cup. He visits Kenny Monaco at Accurate Logistics in New Jersey, whose trucks transport Joe Coffee from port to warehouse. Kenny reminds him that consumer goods don't magically appear in stores, someone has to move them. At Continental Terminals Warehouse, manager Andy Turkowitz shows Jacobs a mind-boggling sight. Hundreds of towers of burlap coffee sacks stacked 15 feet high, stretching across 4 football fields. The warehouse holds 470,000 sacks, enough to make 3 billion cups of coffee. Andy battles daily challenges from moths, controlled by pheromones that turn them homosexual, sloppy stacking, forklift wars, and demanding specialty coffee buyers who insist on hand-selecting individual bags. Jacobs discovers that pallets, those wooden platforms about the size of foosball tables, are the unsung heroes of global commerce. According to Slate, they're the single most important object in the global economy, with billions circulating worldwide and carrying 80% of U.S. commerce. They account for 46% of U.S. hardwood production and saved the Allies in World War II by revolutionizing supply logistics. Not everyone involved in the coffee journey is a positive force, raising an ethical dilemma. When his friend Brian asks if he'd thank the drug dealers who sell meth to truck drivers, Jacobs must consider whether to thank companies like Exxon, whose fossil fuels power coffee transport but harm our planet. Psychology expert Scott Barry Kaufman suggests combining gratitude with compassion, appreciating the help while wishing for reduced suffering. This section illuminates the vast, invisible networks that connect our world, networks we only notice when they fail. As Jacobs writes, the next time you're stuck behind a slow-moving truck on the highway, remember, that truck might be carrying your future coffee, toothpaste, or favorite book. Raw materials form the foundation of Jacobs' coffee journey, from oil for transportation to wood for cups, rubber for tires, and copper for wiring and roasters. To thank some of these workers, he visits ArcelorMittal's massive steel mill in Burns Harbor, Indiana, where steel is made that enables virtually every aspect of coffee production and consumption. Guided by Larry, Jacobs tours the sprawling mill where steel is made from Minnesota iron pellets, limestone, and coke heated to over 4,000 degrees. The sensory experience overwhelms him. Showers of sparks, geysers of water, and glowing orange steel soup. At lunch, he thanks veteran workers Joe Soroki, 42 years, Pat Fisher, 43 years, and Shannon Duncan, a relative punk at 20 years. Shannon, a former dental assistant and crane operator, describes multitasking with 3 control boxes to lift 60,000-pound coils in conditions ranging from freezing to hot enough to cook a Thanksgiving turkey inside a steel coil. Despite improved safety, injuries down 94% in 30 years, workers still face dangers like carbon monoxide poisoning that feels like the worst hangover. The steelworkers take pride in their work, searching for their company's label on bridges and buildings, appreciating the camaraderie, and valuing the stable income that paid for homes, cars, and college educations. Back in New York, Jacobs takes stock of his gratitude journey, wondering how to make his thanks more useful. Following Oxford philosopher Will McCaskill's effective altruism principles, he donates his annual coffee expenditure to dispensers for safe water. He also starts bringing a steel flask to coffee shops to reduce waste, though his first attempt backfires when the barista pours from a paper cup into his flask before tossing the cup, a lesson in the complexity of environmental action. This section reveals how even the most basic materials require complex processes and dedicated workers to transform them into usable products. As Jacobs notes, "We live in a world where millions of people we'll never meet have dedicated their lives to making our lives better, safer, and more comfortable." 5 months and roughly 700 thank yous into his journey, Jacobs finally makes his pilgrimage to Colombia to meet the coffee farmers. The trip involves increasingly rustic transportation: a jet to Bogota, a cramped propeller plane to Neiva, a van to Pitalito, and finally a pickup truck bouncing along treacherous mountain roads for 90 minutes. The Guarnizo farm appears with its light yellow house, metal roof, and enormous chicken strutting about. Six brothers in jeans and soccer jerseys greet Jacobs with quiet olas and handshakes. The eldest, Wilmar, leads him to coffee trees filled with red and yellow cherries rather than beans. When Jacobs tries picking cherries, he quickly fails by selecting ones too green. The best ones should be Twizzler red. The brothers inherited the farm from their father, who got it from his father, who got it from his father. Standing on the farm crystallizes Jacobs' belief that life is 80% cosmic powerball and 20% hard work. He reflects on being born in the developed world to parents who could afford college, and how his genetic makeup and career were shaped by random breaks. While effort and persistence matter, especially for those without his advantages, pure luck is undeniable. Barack Obama acknowledged this, saying his success combined talent and hard work with an element of chance. Recognizing luck's role fosters self-forgiveness, humility, and compassion. Research shows people prompted to credit external factors donate 25% more to charity than those focused on personal qualities. High on the mountain, amid breathtaking scenery, Ed and Wilmar begin discussing their contract. Wilmar wants more money per pound, despite recently signing a 3-year agreement. The conversation is tensed but civil, Wilmar emphasizing the labor-intensive process while Ed points to his own costs, like New York rent and shipping. After lunch, Jacobs reads his handwritten gratitude letter in stumbling Spanish. "Gracias por ustedes. I now understand the work behind my morning coffee and won't take it for granted. Your coffee gives me energy to write and care for my kids. I'll think of you when I drink coffee, and perhaps you'll think of the New Yorkers inspired by what you produce." After a brief silence, Wilmar gives a slight nod and replies, "Gracias a usted." This section reveals how gratitude can bridge vast social and economic divides, creating connections between people who might otherwise never interact. As Jacobs writes, "Gratitude isn't just a feeling, it's a form of connection, a recognition that we're all interdependent." Back in New York, Jacobs continues thanking everyone in his coffee chain, bringing his total to approximately 1,000 people. He's kept a massive list, though the count isn't exact. Some names repeat, and he's occasionally added groups, like when he thanked a Brazilian factory manager and asked him to pass along his gratitude to assembly line workers. He's come to see the world as interconnected through gratitude trails that overlap everywhere. If mapped, they would connect almost everyone. As Italo Calvino described in Invisible Cities, where threads of different colors connect apartments based on relationships, our world would be blanketed by threads of gratitude if we could visualize them all. Jacob's coffee gratitude journey has transformed his perspective. He now regularly thanks baristas, noting, "I'm very grateful for my coffee today." One engineer pointed out the beautiful recursion that you need coffee to make coffee. Steelworkers drink coffee to forge the steel used in coffee equipment. When his barista friend Chung moved to California, Jacobs extended his son Zane's insight by thanking her parents, breaking the thousand thanks barrier. Chung responded that their conversations helped her realize gratitude is a discipline requiring practice. At his birthday dinner, Jacobs redirects celebrations towards his mother, the true hero of his birthday, who did all the hard work. This simple act reflects his newfound understanding that gratitude isn't just about feeling good, it's about recognizing reality more accurately. The project has permanently changed how Jacob sees the world. Every object now appears as a miracle of human collaboration. A pencil isn't just a writing implement, but the culmination of thousands of people's efforts, from graphite miners to paint makers to the designers who determined its hexagonal shape prevents it from rolling off desks. What began as a quirky experiment became a profound life philosophy. Gratitude, Jacobs discovered, isn't just a pleasant emotion, but a more accurate way of seeing reality. Recognizing our profound interdependence and the countless invisible contributions that make our lives possible. As he writes in the book's final pages, we are all connected by invisible threads of gratitude, and the more we acknowledge them, the stronger they become.